I'm Claire Liu, and I'm the CEO of Know Your Company, and today I'm really excited to have here with me Patrick Collison, who is the founder and CEO of Stripe, a payments company that you may or may not have heard of. We are happy customers. Stripe has had some just tremendous success. It's been really amazing to hear about it, to watch from afar, and I think, Patrick, last you told me you're almost 900 people, is that correct?
That's right. We're 800-something, and we'll be 900 very soon.
It's like a small town. It's quite large. Really exceptional. Yeah, the company is so well-respected and so many amazing customers. So thank you so much for being here today. I'm really excited to ask you this one question around leadership.
Thanks so much for having me. To your small town point, this call is from our Dublin office, which is approaching 100 people. And so if I do the town overall, this is a new village forming. So excited to see it. And I've been following your work for the last year and a half now, I guess, at this point. And I have a lot of respect for how you think about leadership and culture.
Thank you.
So I'm excited we can do this.
Thanks so much. I appreciate that. So this one question that I have, I'm actually especially curious to get to your thoughts on it, because here you are leading a almost 900 person, 1,000 person company. And how old are you? Are you 28?
I'm 28.
28, yeah. So we are the same age, and here you are leading, this almost 900-person company. So I'm especially curious to get your thoughts on this question, which is, what's something you wish you would have learned earlier as a leader?
There's obviously all sorts of functional answers that I wish I understood how to think about a finance org sooner, or how to think about building a support and user operations org sooner, mm-hmm. and sort of things like that. I'm trying to think about sort of the meta skill, because, there's, of course, way too many things you wish you... When I talk to leaders of 20, 30, 40-person companies, their mindset is often, not wrongly, around how to keep people happy. And that's, like, a good thing. They care about how people feel. They care about the satisfaction they mm-hmm. feel in working there. They want people to have the resources and the support that they need, and so on. And so I think that caring about people's happiness really comes from a good place.
Yep.
Warren Buffett and Jeff Bezos talk a lot about the fact that as a public company, mm-hmm. Over time, you end up with the shareholders that you deserve. And so if you run the business in a really sort of short-term way, you're going to end up with short-term shareholders. And kind of similarly, if you're clear about the long-term priorities mm-hmm. and principles, and if you remain consistent to them, and mm-hmm. if you kind of do a good job of sort of both setting and then kind of meeting expectations, then over time you earn shareholders who are willing to kind of work with you and partner with you yep. over the long term. And from an organizational standpoint, I think this really applies, where the right mindset is not how do you keep everyone happy, but what kinds of people do you want to have be really happy? And how do you optimize for them? And how do you be the kind of leader that they wish the organization had? Because you're going to make mistakes, and you're going to hire people for the kind of organization you'd like to have over the long term. And so if or when they become unhappy, you're actually sort of doing yourself and them a disservice by sort of trying to cure the short-term issue around their unhappiness. And instead, I think you need to think carefully about sort of what are your principles, what kind of organization do you want to be, and again, what kind of people do you want to have really thrive there?
Absolutely.
And that's a delicate balance, because
yeah.
it's not like you kind of come to an organization and you have some pre-existing confident sense for the answer to that question. I think it's something you necessarily have to kind of learn and iterate on and develop
right.
Over time. And kind of right answer will change over time.
Right.
But I think that thinking about that deliberately, and again, kind of reframing the question as not how do you keep people happy, mm-hmm. but how do you keep the right kind of people for your organization happy?
Right.
And how do you kind of refine that over time and get better at being explicit about what that is, both for kind of prospective employees and
right.
then, of course, for current ones as well. And just kind of by way of example, we published a guide to our culture mm-hmm. back about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah,
publicly.
I saw that. Yeah.
We wrote that initially as just a thing to give to candidates when they came and interviewed.
Uh-huh.
And we tried to write it in such a way that some people would read it and say, hey, that's great for you guys, but it's not for me.
It's not for me.
It's not what I'm looking for. And we consider that success. I mean, obviously, if everyone's telling us that, that's a problem.
Sure.
If nobody's telling us that, that means we're actually not being upfront enough about what we are, because we know, we have the data, that not everyone is a good fit for Stripe. And so it's better for people, considering working here, and it's better for us if we can kind of help people self-select as kind of in as early a way as possible, such that, you know, that they can make a more informed decision about, you know, the right place for them to spend their time. And so anyway, all of that is something that I wish I had appreciated earlier.
That's fascinating. It's fascinating because I think what you point to is this really careful distinction between, like you were saying, not just what makes people happy, but who do we want to make happy in the first place? And that very similar to, you know, when you think from like a product perspective of you can't be all things to all people, right? I mean, even internally, in terms of your culture, as you're trying to grow your own company, you know, you can't be all things to all people in terms of hiring. In terms of keeping folks and being intentional about that and sort of taking a stand on that in the beginning is key, is from what I hear from it.
I think the product analogy is dead on, where, again, no product is going to be the right product for every customer.
Yeah.
And sort of the clearer you are with yourself and with prospective customers about kind of the ideal target market, you know, the happier you're going to be. And so, again, I think it applies to public company shareholders. I think it applies to building a product. And yes, I think it applies to building an organization.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating. The thing that comes to mind is, you know, I'm trying to imagine you and your brother, John, you know, in the very sort of early days of Stripe. It sounds like, I mean, this is an assumption. It sounds like you didn't have maybe what that, this is, you know, this is who we want to make happy. Or did you? Or how did you start thinking about it? Was there a moment where you realized, oh, wow, are we trying to just make everyone happy? And as a, you know, as a team and as a culture, that's not going to be sustainable. And if we really want to build a long-term business, we're going to have to start saying, this is who we are and this is who we're not. This is who we hire for and this is what we don't. This is what looks like someone who works at Stripe and this is what doesn't. Not necessarily physical, you know, appearance, et cetera. But
we always had some sense for it, but we weren't intentional enough about it early on, I would say. And we weren't confident enough in it. And the confidence, I mean, again, I don't think that was kind of entirely wrong in that it would be easy to be overconfident in that regard. And again, when you're 5 to 10 people, you don't know much. We certainly didn't know much. And again, the organization is changing so quickly that even if we did have a confidence for what the right thing was at 5 people, the answer was going to be different at 50 people. And so I think it is kind of a delicate balance in those early stages where, while it's, of course, suboptimal to be underconfident, you know, it would also be bad if you sort of were arrogant or sort of closed-minded about it as well. But I think that we wrote our first kind of guide to sort of how Stripe worked, which is a kind of implicit document also about sort of what kinds of people are likely to be a good fit within the first year or two of starting. And so it was always on our mind to some degree. But I would say this is really a shift in my thinking over the past two and a half years. Like maybe posts kind of being 100, 200 people. Because before 100 people, you can kind of reason individually about each person. Whereas kind of beyond that, you have to be a bit more just kind of principle-based and kind of methodical across the organization overall. And I guess by the time we were sort of 100 or 200 people, we sort of had more data points about things that work well and things that don't, and sort of kinds of people that have a great time at Stripe and people who sort of struggle a bit more.
Yeah.
But I think we could have, and ideally would have, gone under. Like, if I was ever to start a company again, I don't think I'll do. But if I was going to, I would try to think about this more, even when we're 10 and 20 people. And this is now something that I sort of try to suggest to, you know, to founders today. At that stage, as not something to kind of set in stone, but something to kind of really start thinking about. And then again, when somebody's having an issue, to think about, well, they're clearly having an issue. Your diagnosis there is definitely right, but sort of how much of it is you, the company, are screwing something up, and how much of it is you did not do a sufficiently good job of helping that person decide and recognize what's likely to be the right kind of environment for them.
Right. And I think you make a really important point, which is this idea of revisiting what that is in every sort of stage of your company. I mean, again, to bring in the product analogy is, you know, you don't just say, okay, this is who we serve and this is the end all be all, but you always revisit the product, iterate on it, et cetera. And so I think very similarly, it makes sense in the sense that companies, you know, they almost change into different animals when they hit different breakpoints of number of people and events. And so I think that's important, and to have the humility to say, this isn't how we're always going to be, but right now this seems to be who we are and who we need to attract.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think this is part of the value of having people join from other organizations, where they are going to bring dissonance and friction. They are going to bring sort of expectations about how things are done and assumptions and beliefs and all of that. And, you know, some of the time, those are going to be dissonant and wrong, as in wrong for your organization. You're going to have to sort of have a conversation about that, or kind of some mechanism to sort of align on that.
Right.
And then some of the time, they're going to be right. And the issues they're encountering, or the absences and deficiencies that they observe are going to be blind spots that you had. And for us, we've absolutely had both. And that as we've hired people from Twitter or Facebook or Google, or, you know, name your sort of company that's kind of gone before us, there are some things that they expect us to do or not do, or whatever, that we are kind of deliberate about and kind of conscious about doing or not doing. And then there were some things where they came and they expected us to have it, or to do it or not do it, and as we reflected on it. And so, yeah, I think it has to be this living reflection. And whenever you get to the point where those things are firmly embossed on stone tablets, you're no longer a living organization.
Yes. Yeah, I could not agree more. What I'm curious to know, I feel like I could talk about this with you all day. One thing I am curious, though, to know is, how do you choose what those things are, right? How do you, and because you referenced earlier, you referenced data a little bit, and I thought that was really, really interesting. So, you know, it sounds like, again, this is an assumption, so I'm curious to hear what you think. You know, it sounds like, you know, you've had enough people come through and grown in a way where you can sort of almost objectively see, yes, this is what, you know, what's working. These are the folks who seem to be successful or whatnot. Is that how you've decided over the years? Has that changed? How do you know, like, this is who we are as a company? These are the things that we care about. Yes. This is who belongs. This is who doesn't.
I think it's this very difficult, subtle tension and kind of dialectic balance between your kind of first principles, beliefs, and desires for the kind of organization you just want to be.
Yeah.
And the kind of organization that's going to be a good fit for you, in that, you know, you might care a lot about being an organization that's sort of extremely ethical and principled. Mm-hmm. And it's not that you sort of think that that's a more effective business strategy. It's just, even if the opposite is a better business strategy, just, you don't want that to be your organization, right? And so there are some things that I think are just kind of foundational and kind of non-contingent. They're just axioms. And of course, you know, that's going to be an easy axiom to have. But, you know, for example, with Stripe, for engineers working on our product or anything kind of customer-facing, we believe that the engineer has to have a good understanding, his or herself, about how the customer uses it and why they want this or that, and has to be willing to talk to customers and engage with them and sort of be more than just an author of code. They have to kind of really be kind of excited about and willing to kind of properly understand the customer need. To some degree, that's an axiom for us. Like, you know, you can imagine this is a counterfactual world where, well, we have this much bigger product management organization, and sort of they communicate requirements, specifications, and market topology details and everything else to this kind of much more purely focused engineering team. I'm not making a grand claim about which is intrinsically better, but we are the former. And again, I think that for us is just sort of an axiom. I happen to believe that it also makes more sense, but we're not trying to measure it. It's just that that's just who we are.
Right.
But then there has to be also this kind of, as you say, kind of ongoing reflection on incremental updating of your mental model based on what seems to be working well, what things did you expect to work well and didn't, what things did you not expect to work well but did. And something that, as a very broad theme, I've come to place more importance on as Stripe has grown, is just consistency and kind of principles. I don't mean principles in terms of ethical principles. I just mean, when called upon to make a decision, kind of when we were 20 people, I would think, well, what's the best decision to make here? And now I often think about, well, why do we have to make a decision? The fact that we have to make a decision suggests maybe that we're missing some principles or some framework that would make the decision an easy one. You know, for example, we were having a conversation just last week about sort of whether a particular product was kind of polished enough. Mm-hmm. And I realized that kind of we shouldn't be having that conversation. We should instead be thinking about what is our framework for deciding what level of polish a product needs to have at different stages of its life cycle. And I know, you know, you can't be super prescriptive there, but you know, you can kind of have some general guidelines. And so I think part of the essence of leadership is being able to kind of balance these twin forces of, on the one hand, the observational act mm-hmm. of kind of getting this empirical sense for what's working well and what isn't, and not being too inflexible, while on the other hand, actually being kind of strict and definite about the things that you aren't willing to have vary. And so this delicate balance between being flexible enough but not too flexible, mm-hmm. and kind of how do you balance those? That's ultimately like a very subjective judgment call.
So subjective.
And I think it's part of why leadership is hard.
Yeah.
In that there is never a right answer. And it's hard because there are so many first order and second order and third order effects. Like maybe mm-hmm. choosing A versus B, maybe it'll have a short term consequence tomorrow, but it'll also affect Imperial as a hire or the next month.
Yes.
And it'll affect the business strategy over the next 2 years. And so kind of reconciling all of those together, yeah, that's just intrinsically, irreducibly hard.
It's so hard. I'm even thinking about it, not even as a company, but I feel as though even as people, as individuals, we struggle mm-hmm. with knowing what do we stand for and to what point do we flex yep. to other people's feedback or advice or, oh, maybe yep. I am, you know, getting defensive about this and I should change the way. It's like, it's this constant, yep. we're saying,
totally.
You know, back and forth of, you know, those twin forces of, okay, here's what I stand for, but at the same time, I need to be receptive to what's coming in.
I think it's totally right. And I think a lot of things, well, as you say, in life and in companies revolve around those very fine and kind of highly ambiguous balancing acts. Mm-hmm. In that, for example, one thing we spoke about in a culture document I mentioned is being a micro pessimist, but a macro optimist. And I think there's something really important there.
Yeah.
Where, you know, if you're overly cheery and sort of Lego movie style, everything is awesome about your day to day, then you're going to miss really important problems. And you'll probably eventually fail because you didn't fix things that were really broken and that sort of demanded some urgent course correction. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if you're sort of perpetually burdened by and beset by the challenges and the friction and the problems and the deficiencies, you'll never be able to kind of inspire yourself enough to maintain the motivation to do whatever it is that you're pursuing. And you won't be able to inspire others to want to kind of join you in that journey. And so again, it's this fine balance, I think, between optimism and pessimism. And you sort of need to be able to kind of maintain both in your head at the same time. And so I just came from a meeting where we literally reviewed
yeah.
like a long list of problems across different parts of the Stripe product. And like, there's lots of real problems and things we got to fix. And we have to be very attentive to those. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, we also need to remain excited about what Stripe can be in 6 months and a year and 5 years. And just that's, again, I think a challenging part of leadership is steering an organization to have the right balance there.
Absolutely. That duality, that balancing act. Well, Patrick, yes. thank you so much for taking the time. This has been so much fun and I've learned a lot. So appreciate it.
Thank you. It's a good question. I'm excited to hear more of the others' answers.
Cool. Thanks so much.